because he didn't realize that it was sampled. I think someone like Kendall Jenner, someone really random part of the Kardashian Jenner family, he was there for like her radio show. One of them has a radio show, which is weird. Some weird thing I have in common, the Kardashian and Jenners, anyways. And he played it on the radio show, and apparently it kind of blew up, and it blew up on Twitter. And they didn't realize that it was like that he sampled it, and they had to like go through a whole like month long hiatus trying to find this random person called Robert Parker, his family, to try and get them to sign off on it. And apparently paperwork was just long, but anyways, it's fine that they did it, because I mean, it's fine for Bakar. I think he's probably earned millions off of this track, to be honest. So much so that he made the Halo, his album, which came out like last year, a couple years ago now. He made Helen Back Again with Summer Walker, another of us. But yeah, anyways, so we're gonna listen to I Caught You in the Lie, Rob Parker, and then Bakar, Helen Back. Yeah, anyways, I'll catch you next week, 2 p.m., same time, same place. But yeah, hopefully the mixing is like better next week. But I mean, it's been fun to experiment anyways, with, because I can just say what I want. It's a bit more chill when I know no one's going to be listening to it back. But yeah, here we go. Robert Parker, I Caught You in a Lie, Helen Back. Have a good week. See you next time.
down, I thought I had everything. I was lonely. Now you're my everything. I was lonely. I missed a lot of love with a lot of drugs. Then I found you. She liked petty crime. She had green eyes like Mountain Dew. And where she go, I'll never know. Her friends bounce to. I guess it's their loss, cause they'll never know what we'll amount to. And would you be my light, be my yellow? PYT, walking down Portobello, put a smile on his face. At the end of the day, MDMA helped us fly away. Who'd have known you would save my life? Who'd have known you would fly my kite? Could you tell where my head was at when you found me? Me and you went to hell and back just to find peace. Man, I thought I had everything, I was lonely. Now you're my everything, I was lonely. Yeah. I was blessed cause you knew I was low. Head gone, rolling off the throne. I remember we was in the park. Late night, made love on the grass. Got my head in the clouds, counting all my stars. In my ear said the world was ours. Went to hell and back just to heal my wounds. Cause it gets like that, wrong side of the moon. No Tutankhamun, you're my Cleopatra. No side thing, don't need a backer. Need a real one, don't need an actor. A lost one say, think you want a BAFTA. Come and be my girl. Yeah. Could you tell where my head was at when you found me? Me and you went to hell and back just to find peace. Man, I thought I had everything, I was lonely. Now you're my everything, I was lonely. Yeah.
Welcome to Beyond Startups. And today we're featuring a very special live episode to conclude this lovely semester of very, very successful shows. And for the first time, we have a live guest on our show, Dr. Ardati from the School of Computer Science. And he's a lecturer at the University of St. Andrews and also a very passionate advocate for digital inclusion, open knowledge, and participatory design. His work sits at the intersection of technology, society, and social impact. So there's definitely many interesting conversations that will be had today. So stick around with us for the next hour to find out more. Welcome, Abt. Yes, thank you so much for that.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. Sorry for the glitch. I've started saying, like, I'm really excited to be here today, spreading the word about these kind of, which I consider fun stuff, and I hope you find it also fun. So thank you for the introduction. Yes, I'm Abd, so I'm a lecturer at the School of Computer Science, and my domain in terms of, let's maybe start with research, is this intersection between human-computer interaction and software engineering, and I'm focusing on how can we build systems that gets picked up by community easily. So that's kind of, again, also giving voice to communities, and as you mentioned, I'm really an advocate for open knowledge, trying to, again, get communities to represent their voice on this digital world. And I will get into why this is super important. And of course, to get people to represent their voice on this digital world, we need the tools, and we need to design tools that fits to communities. So yes, it's a mishmash of all of that. And that's kind of intersects with both my academic and entrepreneurial journey, which I would love to dive deeper into both with you. Thank you so much again for that.
Well, thank you so much for that. It's very lovely to hear more about your journey. And right away, I would love to ask you a couple questions about your career journey as a whole. I know it has been very vast and extensive, and you've taken a long path and have been involved in many projects surrounding your passions of things like open knowledge. But you were involved in, and are still involved in, a lot of entrepreneurial activity, such as helping to set up a social enterprise. Could you maybe tell us a bit about that story and what that enterprise is all about?
Yes, would love to share. So yeah, it goes back to 2016. Yeah, when I look at the date, you know, I feel like it's quite some time now, you know, but I felt like, you know, it passed so quickly. But yeah, it's all started in 2016. When I was back at my home country. Hi, everyone. I am from Syria. So I come from Syria. It was, you know, really tough, the situation over there. And yeah, I finished my computer engineering degree back home. And I started teaching at my university. You know, with the whole kind of situation at my country, I felt the need for something. We needed to support communities to kind of generate income, and you know, our GDP was, you know, going down, and we've lost most of our resources, whether, you know, oil, land for growing crops, and yeah, it was a tough situation. I felt like we need to invest in people. Human capital is still there. We could, you know, educate and support community to educate themselves to get to the point that they could do freelancing. And that's kind of where, you know, I came up with this idea, let's do freelancing, like build a website for freelancing. And back then there was nothing, you know, there were like few companies from the Gulf region trying to kind of, you know, hire people from Syria, but like they gave them like breadcrumbs from anything they've you know, all the contracts. So yeah, I felt like, yeah, let's do something about it. Let's build a website. And I was really excited, and things, you know, gradually started getting tough, even though I had a brilliant team of both my bright students from uni and like also colleagues from a company that I used to work with. And yeah, but it was really rough. And I felt at that point, you know, I need to travel abroad and acquire the knowledge needed to build such a social enterprise, or enterprise back then it was. And yeah, so that's where I applied for a scholarship. I got the Chevening scholarship and to study a master's degree. And I was lucky enough to get into St. Andrews. And I've done a master's in management and IT. I wanted to get the managerial knowledge. I had the technical expertise, but I didn't know how to run a show, you know, from start to finish. And I thought, you know, I would be able with this master degree to kind of acquire all the skills needed. But little did I know, it was, you know, a bit rough journey. I've definitely, once I came to the UK, I started, you know, communicating with the entrepreneurial center. They were very helpful in, you know, getting me a little bit realistic about my plans. And yeah, I started kind of gradually building towards a couple of, you know, projects. And one of them was, you know, the social enterprise that you have mentioned, Global Share, is where I've started even with my dissertation. I proposed my own dissertation idea to build this system and getting the requirements. Yeah, it was really fun and everything. But yeah, I've had my share of challenges after, you know, finishing my master's, trying to kind of spin off this social enterprise in mind. And that's kind of, you know, developed my my, let's say, experience out of the failures that I had. And I would love maybe to share some of these or maybe move to another question. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I really appreciate you sharing that you faced some challenges. I think all of us along any kind of journey, mostly in building something like an enterprise or even a social enterprise, which comes with unique challenges, is a very tough quest. And you should be very proud of yourself for, you know, sitting here with me today. And I was wondering, what role for yourself in overcoming said challenges would personal systems and habits play? I know that it is quite hard to be an entrepreneur, moreover a social entrepreneur. And what role do personal systems and habits play in one success or your success?
Thank you so much. This is quite an interesting question, actually. And this is actually like an area that I'm at the moment trying to work on. And, you know, throughout my journey, whether back home or wherever, I try to kind of spin off St. Andrews, and through also my research and work with students on several projects, master's dissertation, or I've also like also attended a lot of events around and been also listening and, you know, observing the environment overall in terms of entrepreneurship and startups. I definitely can recommend also a couple of podcasts. So yeah, what I would say is, like, throughout my reading and experience and kind of observing the environment around entrepreneurship, you know, I've developed certain kind of elements I'm trying to kind of tune towards kind of putting something together, which I would call a framework, which I would present to others who are willing to take this journey, which, as you mentioned, it's a rough journey. You know, entrepreneurial is not for, entrepreneurial journeys are not for everyone. It is for those who are willing to, you know, go the extra mile and get a little bit out of their comfort zone, sometimes too much away from the comfort zone. But yeah, it's as you mentioned, so it's a combination, actually. It's interesting that you've touched on the personal and habits and personal development part, which I feel like is quite crucial for any entrepreneur. So maybe I should start with this fact that I would like to share with the audience, is that, like, based on Harvard Business Review, there are like 92% of all startups fail within their three first years. So that's kind of quite a number, and if you thought about it. And what is the biggest reason? So there are like several reasons, which I would then, you know, tie these reasons to important elements that everyone who is considering this journey should think about. So one of the measures is that they build solutions without a real need for them. So that's the basic, you know, hard reality. Like, you put all of the efforts and the time, and then, like, you throw your product out there and no one picks it up, and that's really harsh. So, yeah, that's kind of connects to my interest in developing products, as I mentioned earlier, building, working with communities, you know, and trying to kind of see what communities need is, so that we tailor something around that and ensure that it's going to be picked up immediately after we release it. So that's something I would also like maybe talk a bit about later on, but I'm back to your question. I'm going to get there. So you need to build a product that's quite powerful and unique and tailored, and that requires the skill, of course, that the knowledge around the area. Again, it's important. But if you take a step back, you need to kind of, to get to the point that you build such a high quality product, you need the resilience and, like, maybe another word is kind of persistence, and ensuring that, you know, you won't give up from the first failure, or, like, you know, pump on the road. That's all kind of, you know, it's the mental state that you should get into, like, accepting failure and, you know, having the habits around you that could support you, you know, like waking up, dedicating specific time each week, no matter what, you know, having a responsibility partner who's like, you know, share with them that today, each day, I will spend at least 1 hour on this project. It is important. Consistency is quite crucial for you to see the end of the tunnel in your entrepreneurial journey. So yes, that's kind of, again, a very second important component that you've asked me about. Maybe I'm going to finish with the last component, and then like maybe I have more to share later on based on the discussion, but it's also like the why. Why are you doing this? And that's kind of somehow connects to the second element of you know, your habits. And you cannot develop a habit to do something every day unless you have a very clear why you are doing what you are doing. So again, like, you know, it's for those like, you know, who are considering this, it's a mishmash of more than one element. It's not the product itself. It's not the habit that's going to get you there. It's not the clarity of the idea or like the brilliant idea you have. You need to kind of connect all of these components and then build a community around yourself who could listen to you and, you know, help you along the journey, hold your hand. And yeah, so yeah, well, that's what I have in mind to share. Yeah.
Yeah. That definitely sounds very exciting. And some of the things that I've heard you highlight over and over is the idea of purpose and meaningful innovation, having a why, just as you mentioned. And then also, I suppose, what all the positive habits of accountability, like you mentioned, would fit into is resilience. So once again, I would like to highlight those three key qualities of purpose, resilience, and meaningful innovation. How do you think they tie in, and why do they matter?
So, So as I mentioned, you need to kind of, when you are, you know, embarking on such a journey that's going to be rough, you need to have the why. And I really emphasize this because, you know, along the way, you're going to question that a lot. Why am I doing what I'm doing to myself? You know, I could opt for that job that could mean, you know, stable, decent life. Why am I going through all of this? So if you don't have a clear why, you're gonna stop along the way, you know, and that's really tough. And it's important for you to think about the why, because, you know, we are in this day of age, you know, looking at the maybe news and all sorts of things. We need more people who are, you know, deliberate about what they are doing to kind of, you know, there should be a clear why, which I would also emphasize that it should be tied closely to communities and societies. We need to kind of elevate ourselves. And, you know, I see this culture of maybe some entrepreneurs trying, you know, to build their startup and sell it as soon as possible. You know, that unfortunately leads also to a lot of disappointments along the way. If your goal is to sell fast, which I'm not saying that's bad, you know, that's, you know, this is my personal view. I think there might be few who are doing this entrepreneurial coaching that would not maybe agree with me, but I feel we should again connect with a clear why that supports communities and try to again gradually build habits that would allow us to again build a product around this. So it is, again, there are a lot of examples out there, and I would also maybe take this opportunity to highlight the importance of social entrepreneurship. That's kind of what I've been trying to describe, is when you have a very good cause that you are, you know, pursuing, it's education or, you know, supporting community who are in rural area that are maybe like they don't have, they need to share cars. This is a very interesting project, actually. Some of my students have been working on, you know, car sharing, all of this. So if you tie it to a real community need, you know, it's a win-win situation. Community is going to pick it up, and you would have, you know, the purpose, you know, brag about how you've changed someone's life. And yeah, that again, it's quite important to work out your way around these challenges. So yeah, do you want me, like the other elements, are there anything that you want me to?
Is there anything you would like to?
So, yeah, it's, I guess maybe we've covered enough with the purpose and the mastery of your mindset and the habits. And here maybe the purpose, maybe like let's mention a few techniques that like when I'm mentioning, okay, nice, I want to know why. How should I do this? I would highly recommend maybe like looking up. There are a lot of tools out there, you know, a set of questions, you know, what you will do 10 years from now, where do you see yourself at, you know, and working your way back in 5 years, where should I be with this, you know, startup that I'm thinking about with this, maybe. So it's not about that alone. You need also to think about your physical health. You know, it's about the relations, the community. Where do you see yourself, you know, in 10 years in terms of family maybe and friends, money-wise, all of these things. You start setting yourself goals. And I here can like definitely emphasize the importance of SMART goals, specific, measurable, you know, specific means like I clearly know why I'm doing this. This is, again, ties to the SMART goal that I'm setting. And then measurable, I can see like, okay, from a year on, I should do this, which connects to my purpose, you know. So be clear and try to set goals. And again, there are a lot of techniques that could help you set clear goals that would clarify your why. And then from there, you can start thinking about the habits. And here I can definitely recommend the book, The Atomic Habits. You know, it's quite well known. If you don't want to read it, try at least to read a summary of it. And see, there are a lot of techniques that are mentioned in this book about time blocking. You know, I mentioned early that you need to block certain time slots for your passion, your goals, and your dream startup, and so on. And then again, there are like certain methods and techniques that helps you with building Pomodoro. You know, like setting specific chunks of time. I work for 25 minutes and then take some rest so that I don't get distracted a lot along the journey. So, and I just want to mention that maybe I've mentioned resilience several times, but yesterday I've attended a very nice, you know, symposium. It's about inclusive teaching, and one of the speakers mentioned that we also should not emphasize resilience a lot, you know, because sometimes, you know, when we emphasize it, we try to kind of push people too much out of their comfort zone. You know, you need to kind of adapt, you know, no. We need to also create comfortable environments for people. You know, if you want to fail, if you might fail, you need also like, don't be very ruthless on yourself. So, you know, so a balance, again, that's your mental well-being is quite crucial. It's quite important. You don't want to be burned out along the journey. That's again, connects with healthy habits, you know, balancing a little bit, going maybe for a run, or, you know, a little bit of your physique, a little bit for your career, a little bit for your relations. You know, you need to have a clear why. It might be like, I want to have this startup successful because I want to have a lovely family. So there is no point of like disappearing from your family, you know, for just working on your startup and then getting back to a broken relation or something. So yes, it's quite important. And yeah, maybe like later on we could emphasize and talk a little bit about the products and the social enterprise, maybe models and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. I can definitely now see that you're a lecturer. You're very well spoken. Just so interesting to listen right away. I feel like even from the short 10 minutes, I've learned so much. But either way, all of this feeds into a little project I know you have set up to help starting out social entrepreneurs, having been all through it yourself, and you know, you will be doing in that project exactly what you were doing right now to our dear show listeners and to me teaching. It is called The Inner Path to Purpose-Driven Impact. So I was wondering if you could just share with us what it's all about and how that's going.
Thank you for asking. Yes, indeed. I've been sharing a lot from the kind of ideas that I have been cooking for a while around this project. And it's I would say, like, this is a personal project. It's been for a while on my mind, you know. I've maybe mentioned a little bit about my rough starting point, you know, coming from totally different, you know, country and background to the UK, trying to kind of adapt to this academic environment, you know. English was, you know, it's my second language, and I at the beginning, I was not fluent at all. I barely finished a sentence. For those who have been listening, you know, questioning if they could get to the point maybe to be a lecturer or what. Yeah, I couldn't at the beginning. Yeah, I've talked about this yesterday, actually, at the symposium. It's a rough journey for me, and that, you know, I had to make a lot of compromises, you know, on the work-life balance that I had. And it's been rough. It helped me also at the same time develop this empathy towards others, you know, those who are maybe listening, who are maybe doing a full-time or part-time job along their full-time student working hours and studying hours, those who are coming from different backgrounds, disadvantaged backgrounds, who have to do a full-time job, but there's something inside of them. There's like this spark that I want to do something different, maybe. So this community, you know, you need all the tools needed. You need all the help available to you so that you can go through this journey and hopefully achieve something. So with that in mind, I started kind of again putting together different components, different bits and pieces to kind of again build a framework that I would in the upcoming years start kind of flushing out towards to communities who are again touched by this idea of, like, I want to do something but I can't, I don't have the time, you know. So again, presenting this community with this tool set or again components to think about them before they commit on the journey and equip themselves with the needed tools to go again is quite important for many, and that's kind of driving this idea of having this project where I will kind of again provide and offer maybe short course or different workshops that would emphasize on each component alone and again flush out certain tools and techniques that could help you again clarify your why and then have the mindset ready and then moving on to designing a product that everyone would love and pick up, to the point where I also like cover a little bit about communities and how it's important to build a community around you and so on. So yeah, that's kind of the four steps, I would say. But again, this is an early stage, so this is kind of exclusively shared here with the radio about this project, which I've been again keeping to myself. But yeah, it's about time to kind of again put it out there. Hopefully helps at least one person. If it would help one person, that would be brilliant. So thank you.
That's absolutely exciting. Thank you so much for making us the first people to find out about all of this. And well, of course, right at the end there, you have mentioned the key framework of your project, which is finding your why, owning your mind, and designing what matters. And I just wanted to ask you to more specifically expand on why that helps create real change and how social entrepreneurs in general, like, if you have any pieces of advice that you would like to share on how real change can be created, because Yes, I think a lot of us want to see change in the world, but, you know, even in daily life, people are just unsure of how to make it happen. So if you could share a bit about that.
Okay, that's, I would say maybe a little bit, it's a deep question, I would say, maybe, like, because, again, I guess, unfortunately, you know, with the media and news surrounding certain individuals in this world, unfortunately, there's a lot of, you know, highlight on certain characters. You know, there is this kind of entrepreneurial picture, stereotypical picture of an entrepreneur out there, which I encourage all of those listening, you know, being, you know, hooked up on a certain idea that, yeah, we need to do this and that for the sake of maybe fame or even money, which is important. I'm not saying it's not important. Without money, your venture would die and you would struggle. Obviously, you want some cash flowing throughout your enterprise. But I would say, when you are trying to kind of connect the thing to your why, and, you know, looking at the community surrounding you, there are a lot of challenges. So we should not just, you know, ride on the next hype around a certain thing. Now you can, like, look around. It's about AI. Yeah, let's use AI. Why? Why? Like, why? Like, we have the technology, and I see a lot of, you know, people, like, their approach is like, yeah, we have this technology, let's figure out what we would make out of it. Why did you make it, like, start with the why I would make something? And again, that would help you center your venture around a certain community, listen to that community rather than, like, go to your, you know, silo and try to kind of build something quite fancy but no one would pick up. So I would say, definitely, if you connect with community well, and, you know, when I say connect with community, I definitely recommend you not just throw a questionnaire out there for someone to kind of fill and know. No, go there, you know, live someone's life. It's called ethnography, and that's something that I've used a lot in my research, where you kind of, you know, I've researched online Wikipedia community, and maybe we could move a little bit towards academia a bit. But yeah, I'm researching, developing tools for an online community, which is Wikipedia. So I became a Wikipedian. I started writing articles. I've lived their life. I understand their challenges. And that's where I could have a more informed discussion with this community. So yeah, for example, again, if you want to build something, try to think about what problem that you are trying to solve and start with what we call in the domain, and you can look up these two keywords, product discovery phase. Discovery phase of a product, we kind of identify what is the problem that we are trying to solve, who is affected, you know, clearly define it, and that where certain ideas emerge. And unfortunately, many start with the end, you know, ideas, and then try to walk their way back. And that's where most of these ideas won't have an impact. And if you don't have an impact on someone's life, no one's going to pay or care about whatever you are trying to put out there.
I think that's an absolutely amazing take. I think listening to you talk about that really made me remember of a really good quote. Don't fall in love with the idea, fall in love with the problem. So I think that feeds into it very nicely. And yeah, thank you so much for sharing about this project. I'm sure you will be able to help countless starting out entrepreneurs and go on this journey and better understand their communities and get involved and make products that really do change lives. But as for some of the other things that you do, I know that you co-lead the Idea Network. It's an initiative focused on co-creating digital inclusion frameworks within communities of, like, researchers and policymakers. And I really would love to know more about what the IDEA Network it is about in general, like in itself, and how it serves to create lasting impact, because as I understand, a lot of our discussion is centered about real lasting change.
Yes, thank you so much for bringing this up. Yeah, I would love to share. So this is something that has been going on since 2021, in 1st of April. It was, Fool's April. But yeah, we started on that day. Actually, we've kicked off this network. So IDEA Network stands for Inclusion, Diversity, Equity, and Accessibility Network. And it is a network of both staff members and students across University of St. Andrews and beyond. It's turning into a global network of researchers, you know, and communities coming together to, again, address certain problems. So that again, connects to something that deeply resonates with me. You know, when I was back home, when I was back in Syria, you know, I tried to build, I've mentioned earlier on that I wanted to build this freelancing website, and but there was no knowledge available to me, you know, because of the sanctions. For example, Coursera was blocked on us, and Udemy, all of these, and there was like a severe brain drain. There were no people, you know, people leaving Syria, so how are you going to build something with? So I needed the knowledge, but knowledge was not there for me to kind of, you know, and I needed, obviously, most knowledge is available in English and so on. So the IDEA Network's idea is to kind of, yeah, get it? IDEA Network, IDEA. Okay, that was a bad joke. Anyway, so the IDEA Network tried to kind of bring researchers closer to this problem, you know, trying to research the problem of knowledge gaps. How can we fill knowledge gaps in this world? You know, Wikipedia in English definitely totally different in Wikipedia in Arabic, and that's the most fundamental or the most used repository of knowledge, Wikipedia. So how can we address these knowledge gaps? How can we get researchers to research these tools used to write articles on Wikipedia, for example? Because unfortunately, because it's not, again, this hot area, you know, it's Wikipedia and open knowledge, and you definitely, everyone have benefit from Wikipedia, for example. But unfortunately, there's a lack of interest in researching this platform and see how we can, again, support communities to express their voice in the world. And maybe like the audience would say, like, why do we care about Wikipedia? Why are you kind of, suddenly you were talking about the IDEA Network and now about Wikipedia, what is the connection? Again, so I'm really passionate about filling knowledge gaps, especially for those, again, in developing countries who don't have access to such knowledge. And that's quite crucial, and one of the most important repositories of knowledge, I mentioned that, Wikipedia. And why it's crucial to kind of fill the knowledge gaps. Now, everything online, open access kind of content online, being hoovered and scraped by all of these AI large language models. And if you notice, like at the beginning of ChatGPT, all of these large language models, you've noticed how sometimes it's biased, most of the time it's biased, you know? Why? Where is this bias coming from? Because if there's no representation of a certain, you know, community in this data set or like this global network of knowledge, if there's no representation of certain communities' voices, AI modules are being trained on this and these gaps gets amplified in the LLM modules, and their kind of, again, answers would be a little bit biased, or sometimes biased a lot, because even like research proven that it does not only represent the bias in the data sets, it amplifies bias, you know? And now LLMs are being trained on data or content generated by LLMs themselves, you know, with the lack of access to open access knowledge, like Wikipedia, there are like less and less websites allowing scrapers to scrape all of their content. So most of the attention is being put on Wikipedia and its knowledge because it has, you know, vast amount of knowledge. So what I'm trying to say here is we need to pay attention to filling certain gaps, getting these disadvantaged communities who don't have maybe the time to volunteer to write articles on Wikipedia to contribute so that we can fill these knowledge gaps and represent their voice. But there's a bigger problem here. You know, if we are talking about disadvantaged communities who you want to kind of represent their voice in this digital world, most of them don't have the digital skills needed to write content at the first place. So how can you solve this? You know, there's like now in the UK itself, there's a huge problem with digital poverty. Now like according to the recent statistics, for example, there are 2 million people, or I guess, 2 million people who cannot do a very basic task over the internet. And that by 2030, there are 4 million workers who will lack the digital skills needed, or like they don't have the skills needed for the kind of market needs, and leading to £64 billion loss in economy each year by 2030. So again, I highly encourage you to kind of look up all of these stats. There's a huge problem around digital inclusion. So we'd love to see more startups, you know, working around this area. But back to the point. So we need people to represent their voice on this digital world, but they don't have the skills. So how can we, again, train people on developing these skills? This how I'm translating it with my colleagues at the ID Network into research questions around it, trying to get the social anthropology, for example, social anthropology researcher research these communities' structure. How can we bring them, you know, to the table and so on? How can we do ethnography? I've mentioned that early on. I bring the computer scientists to research, for example, the tools that we could build for them. I can bring, for example, management researchers to kind of see the group dynamics around, you know, bringing teams of these communities, again, developing their skills and collaborating. So simply put, you know, I may have confused some of you, but simply put, the ID Network is, again, trying to bring researchers closer to communities so that we can build the mechanisms and the systems needed to fill the knowledge gaps. And part of doing so, we are trying to address one social issue at a time. And the focus now is on digital poverty and digital exclusion.
Thank you so much for sharing that. That is very fascinating. And the stats that you have about digital literacy being a limiting factor for so many people is genuinely scary, because the times are changing and they're changing so fast, and a lot of us struggle to keep up. So it is truly a good problem to be solving, a good cause. So thank you so much for working on that. And I know under the ID Network, one of the projects that you work on is the role of universities in ethical digital nation, which from the name, I assume, ties into all of the problems that you just talked about and the role of universities in solving it. So if you could talk about your involvement in that and in general, just a bit about this project. Okay.
Thank you again. Yes, it's quite interesting project that I have been running at the School of Computer Science. And again, I was lucky enough to get a bit of funding from Scotland Future Series, and the funding allowed us to explore, simply put, what is the role of university in an ethical digital nation, and why I'm picking up on these three words, this term, ethical digital nation. It's part of the government strategy. And they put a full report in 2023 of how they envision Scotland being the ethical digital nation and trying to kind of again unpack certain ideas around how we are kind of what recommendations are there around using data and involving communities in the discussions around how developing skills for people, digital skills and so on. So there are, it's quite rich report that I highly recommend kind of reading, because again it allows you to understand the ecosystem and the environment around again possible solutions and areas that we need to pay attention to when we are thinking about technology and digital in Scotland and globally. Actually it has a lot of again connected ideas to the global environment. So when we were reading this report, me and my colleagues, we've noticed that we could expand a little bit or unpack specifically the role of the university. What role universities can play in trying to kind of again drive and support the government in their vision to achieve this, you know, ethical digital nation that we would love to see. So what can we do as universities? And this question again led to this proposal to get this small pot of fund that allowed us to run several workshops where we brought community members, we brought researchers, we brought also university representation to sit together and, you know, answer certain questions. Where do you see, for example, universities in 2030, you know, 2030, in terms of playing such a role, what role they could do? And we started to kind of work our way back, you know, what milestones we have to that vision of a university kind of contributing meaningfully and to that vision, and looking at the baby steps that we could do. And that kind of led to a very rich discussion around these kind of topics. Interesting ideas emerged, and we are working on a white paper actually that would try to analyze all of these workshops and to kind of represent certain themes emerge from these workshops, and then we will share this kind of summary that we have with the audience who've participated in the project, so that they help us come up with certain recommendations for communities, government, and universities to again come closer together to come up again with an approach that would allow us to achieve this vision of an ethical digital nation. I feel like universities, one of the very strongholds for a space for supporting communities, and we need to also like unpack this and try to revisit it as much as we could to kind of again adapt to the environment and see how we can align more with communities rather than like industry alone and try to kind of balance things. We are in a unique position, and I'm really lucky to be at St. Andrews and the School of Computer Science specifically to have this flexibility to explore all of these fun stuff. And I'm keen to kind of again, this is something I would definitely share soon on my socials about like this white paper. Hopefully it would again lead to certain impact on policies, for example at universities, or certain organizations trying to deal with universities to drive more impact towards again a more ethical future at Scotland and beyond.
Yes, thank you so much for that. So everybody, make sure to follow Dr. Abd Erdati on social media and look out for that white paper. And as we slowly start to round up this extremely fascinating episode of Beyond Startups, I was wondering if you could answer to me briefly, how do you see the future of open knowledge? And what role do you think communities will have in shaping digital inclusion and so onwards?
Thank you so much. This is quite a nice question to wrap up things with. because I'm going to try to kind of tie to most of the ideas that I try to kind of start with. So trying to kind of to think of a future, I would love to see a future where we think more about empowering communities. Why is that important? Again, back to this concept or theory or whatever we're gonna call it around how AI, for example, now is scraping all of the content across the internet to make sense of the world. You know, that I have been reading, for example, a lot of research around this area and how we can counter bias and how can we do something about it. And if you look at the techniques used to address the bias in AI, you would see like several techniques, but I might try to kind of maybe highlight three of them. So something that we could do for the data before we train the model, the AI, all of this data that we scrape from over the internet, what some researchers or companies try to do is to kind of patch this data sets. And how do they do that is kind of, again, generate content that would balance things. You know, if there's something that talks a lot about, for example, male dominating a certain occupation, they try to kind of patch it with certain data sets that maybe they make up. And yeah, so that's one technique. The other technique is also like trying to kind of, in the midway of after you've maybe had the data, which is a little bit biased, you would work on the algorithms themselves and try to kind of, you know, use techniques that would, again, avoid certain bias. And there's like a third approach, which is kind of filtering out all of the bias that could come out of such a mechanism. And, you know, when I look at this and try to kind of make sense out of it, I get this question. It's like, why don't we try to get people to express their voice, you know, rather than trying to get machines to say what they would like to say, you know? And this is kind of a very tough thing, but it's worthwhile. It's worth, you know, empowering communities, getting them the skills needed for them to be able to express their voice over the internet, because like all good things comes out of empowering people. So I envision a future where we can, you know, empower communities to empower themselves. So empower maybe champions from different communities, and explore different training modules that we could train people with. And we need a lot of researchers and entrepreneurs to kind of explore this and try to, again, push boundaries on getting people to represent themselves in the open knowledge world, so that, again, they would be empowered with the tools needed and the skills needed to do other stuff, like work, you know, working online. Everything is becoming online, and, you know, putting it, and the more we emphasize technology rather than people, the more exclusion you will find in societies. You know, this gap is widening between those, for example, now even those using AI. We need to train people on AI. We need to see how we can use it even as a tool in the mechanism of addressing all of these gaps. So I hope that, you know, that there will be a future where communities are fully represented, and to do so, we need all the efforts needed, all efforts available to support communities. And yeah, so this is, I guess, this is kind of the first part of a question. There was like different second part, or
yeah, I believe the second part was more centered around how communities would be able to impact that themselves, and how communities feed into shaping our digital future.
Yes. So So yes, this is again, I'm hopeful that whatever we will do, we should not kind of try to design it in a way that we will be leading. We need to step back at one point. And it's a very good point you've mentioned, because what I'm thinking about or trying to do is to kind of create sustainable models where we can, again, train a subset of the community, those who are, like, you know, privileged enough even to attend certain trainings and research events or whatever we are trying to help with, and maybe get back to their communities and hopefully, you know, expand and share the knowledge. It's a wave that we would be hopefully starting with our